Running a call center is tough. Leading a sales team is a challenge. Luckily, your hosts know what it takes to succeed. What you can expect from your two guides? Conversations that won't be overly scripted. Definitely not salesy or boring. Just filled with as much value as possible. Each week, Jason and Oliver will bring you topics to help scale your team, increase profits, and actually feel like you are winning. So, if you are ready to up your game and become the best in the business, tune in, take notes, and be prepared to learn. And here they are with another episode of Call Center Confidence. It's Jason Cutter and Oliver Katt.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I'm back. Welcome, episode 24, Mr. Oliver Katt. Thank you, first off, for holding down the fort, having a great conversation with my buddy Fred Stacy last week, which we're going to continue this conversation. I appreciate you always stepping in and making things happen, even if I'm traveling and or doing whatever I'm doing,
So I'm gonna take a month off next.
Okay, that's fair. You know, it's funny because while I was listening to the replay and watching the replay, I was thinking, Oliver needs to take some time. I need to step up. You mentioned a couple of times how, you know, you're filling in and I'm always off. I think it's your time. I think obviously I can hold it down, but then we would miss you for sure. It wouldn't be the same. You seem to do a good job without me. I don't know how I would do without you. Wouldn't be as fun. For sure.
No, exactly. Anyway, look, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you.
We did miss you. I promise you I did. But Fred and I had a very good conversation about outsourcing last week, which, as you said, we are going to continue today. So it's another big topic. But how have you been? Are you refreshed? Are you ready to go? Are you ready to drop some bombs today?
I am refreshed enough after traveling for a couple of weeks in different conferences and different events and different training. So all that stuff actually fires me up because it kind of gets me back in the groove. Definitely. And I do want to share one side note here before we jump into it. And of course, anyone watching this, this is the part where I ask you to like, to comment, say hello, say where you're coming from. Byron, nice for you to tune in via Facebook, but this is on LinkedIn, it's on Facebook, it's on YouTube. Put a comment, say hello, questions, thoughts, ideas, especially as we talk about offshoring, outsourcing, all of those kind of things. You know, make sure to give this a like and a share. Let's spread this out to everyone who might be in the call center space. But I do want to share, before we dive into it, just a funny side note, Mr. Oliver, if I can. One of the funniest comments I've received recently was from somebody who liked our show, and I wasn't connected with him on LinkedIn. I'm not going to mention any names. He can comment if he likes. But it's somebody you know. He found the show a couple of weeks ago, and then I connected with him. And his comment to me was, it threw him off for a while because he kept hearing smoke alarm and he was running through his house trying to figure out which one of his smoke alarms were going off that whole time. And it's funny because I hear it in the replays. I hear it. It's you. It's Mr. Oliver. He and I were joking via chat in LinkedIn. Is it fixed? Is it good? No, I didn't hear it.
It just went off then. Look, I've got noise cancellation on, so they shouldn't be being picked up anyway.
Okay, good. Yeah,
but obviously it didn't. I'll let you know if it goes again and just listen out for it. But I've tuned out to it now, and I'll tell you why I've tuned out to it. One, because where I live at the minute, apparently every shop that sells 9-volt square batteries have run out of batteries. So there are none. So obviously everybody's replacing their smoke alarm batteries at the minute. And secondly, whoever put this smoke alarm in my office decided to put it where the roof pivots. And right now, it's about 3 meters off the ground. So if anybody's listening and they live near me and they have a ladder and they're not worried about their safety, please come round to my house right now and rip this bloody battery out, because I would have done it if I could. I'm going to have to put 2 tables on top of each other and a stool to get up there. Or I might just try and whack it off with a... I'm not saying that again. I might try and take it off with a pole that I've got somewhere. But look, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Byron, I know for a fact, is in the outsourcing world. So he's tuning in, especially for that. And he's a long-time listener. Looking right now, We've got people tuned in across our social media platforms. We've got people from South Africa. We've got people from the Dominican Republic tuning in. US, UK, Egypt are happening today, and Germany. So we've got people coming in from all over the place, obviously, not to mention any of our social media platforms, website usage, Instagram, you name it. We are everywhere, coming at you from all angles, and not to mention our podcast launches as well. So there's a lot going on. And of course, we're going to be going mainstream. We're going to be upping the game and upping the ante, which we'll tell you about at the end of the show as we go into this. So a lot happening today. And obviously today, we are picking up that outsourcing topic. That's where we're going. That's what we're going to hit with. And that's what we're rocking and rolling. So Jason, where do we want to kick off today?
You know, I think it would be great because you and Fred had just a fantastic conversation. There was so many cool things that as I was listening to it, it was things that I hadn't really thought about. I would love to just put you on the spot, unprepared and unplanned, which is always fun. We'll do Oliver's. How about this? Oliver's top three in the first minute, first few minutes of the show. What were the top three insights, lessons, things that stuck in your mind from your conversation last week with the man, Fred Stacey? Uh-oh. Oliver, you there? Hope the smoke alarm hasn't frozen you too much. All right. Well, Oliver's a little frozen, so we'll wait for him to come back. I am watching the replay as well. It looks like he might be frozen. So on that note, you know, one of the biggest things until you come back, just making sure. You know, one of the biggest things that I got from this that was important and interesting was the amount of thought or ideas that go into outsourcing when people are talking about, okay, what's the value or price from this region to the value and price of another region? And if you're familiar with outsourcing, if you've used outsourcing from different places through your company or you provide that, put in the comments in the chats. The biggest thing that I found was that conversation around the, you know, when somebody's considering outsourcing, what can you do as far as, you know, looking at the prices between, you know, $5 or $10 here, $10 and $15 here, and where, how do you make that decision? How do you choose that? And, you know, people who are price conscious say, I just want the lowest, cheapest outsourcing offshore, whatever that looks like. And do they really know what they're getting? Is it really a good fit? Oliver, welcome back.
Hey,
I was just talking about one of my biggest insights that I got from the conversation was just that price comparison, price shopping, if you will, when people are looking at outsourcing. And I see it all the time where it's like, well, why would I pay $15 because I can get somebody to do this work in the Philippines for five, right? Even if that's no longer a valid price, people will stick on that and they think, okay, I can do that. But then the question is what are you getting? What fits your campaign, your program, your project? Are you trying to sell something? If so, some regions might not be good over at that, right? And it at a sale, some might be good at lead generation, some might be good at customer service. Where does that fit in with your thoughts and the insights you got from Fred?
Okay, so I know you asked me my question and I didn't lose signal on purpose to avoid your question. I'm just going to say, okay, you know, just to give me some more time to think. Look, I'm going to come back and I'm going to cycle around. I'm going to answer your first question first of all, all right? The first question for me, I think it's price, which I know you were just alluding to there. That's the number one. Secondly, it's the quality that's delivered. And for three, for me, it's the avenue of opportunity, considering that I think for me, one of the biggest things that most outsourcers do is it's 24-hour schedule, 7 days a week. They've got the ability, they've got the technology, they've got everything in place, they've got the functionality. And I think if you kind of go down that, which we are going to talk about today, because I want to reiterate that from last week, these three areas, combine them together, create the ultimate outsourcing machine. And to touch on what you were talking about with price, I think price is one of the big things. And obviously, Byron has just commented quality over price and making sure that we get the right people in place versus rather than paying, you know, cheap dollar just to get a bum on a seat. All right. There's a lot of different ways you can look at it. So if I was to break those down and we look at the cost avenue, that is, I think, one of the biggest attractors when it comes to outsourcing your call center, if you've already got one, or if it comes to using an outsourcer for an avenue that you've never actually approached before. And I know people that are paying a hell of a lot of money on Shore, because costs on Shore are expensive, and to get the right personnel is expensive when you look at onshore. Whereas when you go offshore, as you mentioned a minute ago, I think it was you said the Philippines or Indonesia or somewhere like that, you know, those prices do go down. It does get lower and lower. But do you sacrifice quality for going into certain areas in the world? Now, again, some people will say some countries are better than others. And last week we didn't want to kind of focus on that topic because, you know, some people will have bias to where they go, you know, whether you're in Central America, South America, you're going over to the Middle East or somewhere like that. You're looking at South Africa. There's so many different options when it comes to outsourcing. And I think everybody has their own strengths. Everybody has their own qualities. And I think that's what you need to focus on when you are putting something into an outsourcer. And price is there. It's always going to be there because everybody wants to know what's going to be my return on investment. What's going to be my deliverables? How much is it going to hit my financials? But one thing that we know today now more than ever is don't sacrifice, as Byron said, quality for the sake of cost. Okay. Now, I've worked with people that will charge you $5 an hour. I've worked with people that will charge you $20 an hour. But it's what they deliver and how they deliver it that counts to me. Is it the right reporting? Is it the right financial reward? Is it the right people? Are you giving something in place? And, you know, I could talk about this for hours. Outsourcing is a big passion of mine. It has been for a very long time. One of my very first, or should I say second, call center jobs was working for an outsourcer. And I learned everything I need to know today by working in an outsourcer versus working in-house. And Fred and I spoke about it last week. You know, we both transitioned to an outsourcer to learn what we know now. And that's created the foundation of what we do and why we do it, because there are so many opportunities there. And the outsourcer that I work for in the UK did exactly what everybody else does on a global scale. They just charge more for it. And that's it. It depends on where you go. Depends on what you do. And that's why some offices have locations all around the world so they can offer different price points, but you go to the same company. So look, price is a big factor. That was point number one, if I kind of addressed your question there. That was mic drop number one. Mic drop number two is the ability for me to kind of scale, to grow the technology and everything else behind it. And I think this is one of the reasons why people outsource, is because when you put and you pay as a business for 10 bums on seats, guess what? You get 10 bums on seats. You're not paying for shrinkage. You're not paying for sickness, holiday, benefits. That's built in. It's baked into those costs. And that's why outsourcers are exceptional, because do you know what? They pick up the costs on their end and they build it into their hourly rates or their commission rates or whatever that might be. And I think the ability for call centers that can scale quickly, that have the ability to bring in the right recruitment at the right time, do an amazing job. Some people do it remotely. Some people do it there and then. Some people do it with the teams they already have in-house and they move people around. And if you went to an outsourcer and said, hey, look, I want a 10-seater trial, but I want to ramp this up to 100 people within 6 months, guess what? They're going to make it happen. And I think that's one of the great things about it, is they're not stuck in, you know, not making those decisions. And Jason, you know, you and I had a conversation, 17 minutes ago, two minutes before we went live, about the reason why people get stuck, the reason why things don't happen is because people don't make decisions. And I think one thing that I learned from an outsourcer is they have to make a decision and they have to make it quick. And I think that's a very valid point with most outsourcers, that they're ready at the drop of a hat. And I think,
yeah,
go on, sorry.
I agree. I mean, you know, to the point of what you're talking about with the scaling up and making decisions, I think one of the biggest things is when you're dealing with outsourcing specifically, that is a company that understands their one job to do, which is to service their client, which is another company, and then also to have that as something they can offer more and more. So whether it's filling more seats or it is growing a campaign or doing the reporting, doing the managing, that's their one task. And you would think, right, like part of me would think that's the company that would then use outsourcing. They also know that they have that one job, but they don't. It's interesting because if you look at an organization, let's say, you know, it's a B2B SaaS company, right? Mm-hmm. So they've got sales as one component, but then they've got the service, they've got implementation, they've got account management, they've got billing, they've got all these other things that they're trying to do. Yes, they're going after one clientele, but usually they have a lot of things going on, right? When you look at outsourcing, they have essentially one job. Yes, they have their business behind them and they have all these things they have to do, but they essentially have one job and one focus. And I think a lot of times that provides something that a company struggles with because it's so focused. Using that example that you brought up that we were talking about right before we hit live, is this potential client for both of us to work with that needs mm-hmm. help with outsourcing and knows they need help and has said they need help and has said their process is struggling and or broken and or, you know, whatever you want to use, and not making the decision, right? And they're not choosing to move forward, or they're dragging their feet, or they're analyzing and they're planning and they're putting together strategies. It's one of those things where people like you and I, we can be a little upset or surprised that people don't make a decision to fix the thing. But what I have found in life in general is that if somebody was good at fixing or making decisions or taking action, they probably wouldn't have been in the situation they're in right now anyway. And if that's the case, then they wouldn't need help, or they would know what they want. For anybody else, it just takes some effort. I know on my main podcast, the Scalable Call Center Sales podcast, I have interviewed some BPO leaders. And when we talk about that from a sales side, a lot of it is companies who don't know what they want yet, or they don't know what they need, or they don't even have their processes in line yet. And so they might want to outsource. They're thinking about it, but they don't know how to make it successful. So it's really about having a partner on the outsourcing side that can kind of help build the process and pick up the ball and run with it, and kind of alleviate that pressure, right? Is that what you're saying too?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think one of the things that I love about outsourcing is as somebody that is sending their processes or their center or whatever it might be to the outsourcer, is you more than likely get more information back from your outsourcing partner than you would do in-house. And I've experienced this, and I've worked with some people that we've moved offshore, where internally they've had very basic reporting, very basic management structure and things like that. And then all of a sudden they've cut their costs, they've moved their workforce overseas. And I think one of the great things to talk about when it comes to outsourcing is I want to be clear that a lot of companies that I work with actually move their current teams or whoever's on the phones or whatever the process is somewhere else in the business, which is great. So you're not losing jobs locally or anything like that. And I'm hitting my laptop. Sorry about that. But the point is, when it has gone overseas and when it has gone offshore, the data that they are now receiving is exponential. I work with a partner at the moment, and the reporting we get is incredible, from live rates to average handling times to sales convert. Oh yeah, it just goes on for ages. Now, I'm not saying you need all this data, because not everybody, you know, sometimes you measure too much data. But the point I'm trying to make is, if you ever want to go back and look at some historical data on X, Y, and Z, it's already covered. Whereas some internals would never, ever think of it like that. And I think that's one of the great things about it. And I love that outsourcing provides you with that information, usually without even having to ask. And I think that's a very good reporting tool or side of the business to have when it comes back to giving your information to your client.
Well, and from what I've seen with successful outsourcing offshore, nearshore, even onshore companies that do this as a business, is that's the business they're in. And what they're focused on is two things, which is really their value. Because they're so focused, they're their effort is on customer satisfaction, on client satisfaction, and the client is actually the company that's hiring them to run campaigns. Yes, ultimately, they want the actual end user consumer or customer mm-hmm. they're enrolling or selling to or reaching out to be happy or providing customer service for, or whatever that looks like. But at the end of the day, they want to make the person happy who's paying the bills, which is the company that's hired them to do the outsourcing, yep. the effort, those campaigns. And so when that's in alignment, they're focused on that customer satisfaction and whatever it takes to do that. The other part is because it's a separate entity, because it's not physically in the office where you can go walk over there and ask questions or look at reports or look at dashboards on the screen, to when it's done well, it requires much more transparency of data so that everyone can monitor it and everyone knows what's going on to ensure that it's successful. And what I found, even internal, when organizations, they have sales, they have marketing, everything is in-house, and they have a high level of transparency with the data, with the metrics across all the departments, they're more successful as well. Because one of the things, and we've talked about this before with the silos between sales and marketing, is those silos exist usually where people take some data and then they go into spin mode and they spin the data to tell the story about how amazing they are or why nothing is their fault, right? When you have pure, transparent, real-time data, there's no spinning. There's no storytelling. It is what it is. Here's the data. When you have an outsource partner that has transparent real-time, if possible, data and access, there's also no spinning that data. It's either working or it's not. And what I found is that same philosophy, internal, external, is what helps drive that success. And again, I think if we look at, even if you take some of these principles and say in-house, if I had a sales team in-house, right? It's a first-party sales company, they're selling. Clients are then transferred to the back end, the processing, customer service, whatever that looks like. If they also focused on their number one job was client success, the client being the company, right? How do I make the company successful? Not just myself, not just my goals, my metrics, how do I close a deal today? And I don't care if they cancel tomorrow because I just want to get paid today. Like if a sales op also focused on the big picture and in making sure the company was successful, lights out, same results, it would be a success. Yep. And it's a game changer when departments focus on that instead of themselves.
Yeah. So, all right. So let me ask you a question, because we're talking about the pros, we talk about the cons, what works and what doesn't work, right? And some people need to understand this, and internal businesses, some people need to appreciate this. So I want to ask you a question, and I'm going to put you on the spot, all right? Here comes your top three tips and takeaways from Mr. Jason Cutter.
All right. Okay. All right. I'm ready.
Let me ask you this. What do you feel are the reasons sometimes, and the reason why I'm giving this tip is because if you're thinking about sourcing and you're speaking to outsource partners or anything like that, you know, when you speak to people like us, you know, we will kind of give you this and we'll give you the pros, we'll give you the cons and why it works and why it doesn't work. But where do you think there are three reasons why outsourcing contact centers or that type of process fails with an outsourcer? All right. Give me a moment to think about this. And the reason why we're talking about, are you
ready? Oh, no, I'm good.
All right, fine. All right. So hit me with it. And I'll tell you why afterwards. Come on, give me your top three.
Okay. I'll try to limit it to three and I'll try to keep it to less than the 35 minutes we have left as to why.
Okay, go for it. Done. Right. Good morning.
I can't promise either of those things. Anybody who knows me when I get on a roll, especially about stuff like this, sales operations, knows that it's game on. So, but seriously, there's some main reasons. I think the one, I don't even know if I'm going to go with three, because I think there's one that overrides everything. And I could break it up into three, but it's literally one. I see outsourcing fail, especially when we talk about sales and sales operations and sales related campaigns, lead generation or sales. You can put them into the same thing, right? Revenue generating campaigns. The main reason I see them fail is when an organization, the company looking to outsource, does not know how to win themselves And instead of figuring it out themselves, they look to hire an outsourced company to do it for them. And so what happens is, instead of delegating their sales ops, instead of getting a partner to help grow the sales ops that they know works, they abdicate their sales ops. They say, I don't know how to sell and I can't get my teams to be very successful, probably because I have no scripts, no processes, no training, no leadership development, none of that. So instead, what I'm going to do, instead of building that myself, I am going to find somebody who could just do it for me and make me money while I sleep, so that I don't have to do it myself. And that's fundamentally the biggest thing, is where a company, they don't have a scalable sales operation built. They don't have a process where they know if they add some more inputs, they will get an exponential amount of outputs at the other end. And so what they do is they hope somebody else will know how to raise their child for them. And so they hand that child over to somebody else and hoping that they will do a good job. Number one thing that I see, A, what gets people in trouble when they outsource because of that, or B, they companies who outsource turn down clients because they know that client's not going to be successful. Now, here's the big thing with this is generally what happens is they're not successful with outsourcing. It's not that the outsource company can't figure it out. It's not that the outsource company isn't good enough to build it, to build the scripts, the training. You and I have both worked on campaigns where somebody comes to us with a dumpster fire and says, here, can you please sell this because I don't know what I'm doing? And I know we've both said, yes, we can do it. But the challenge is most companies who want that level of service done for them, they usually don't have the patience and the pain tolerance for what it's going to cost and how long it's going to take to achieve results. It could be 3 months. It could be 6 months. If it's a B2B sales process, it could take 6 to 12 months to really figure it out and get the momentum with the pipeline and the sales team. And companies I see after 3 months, they're like, this isn't working. And they give up too early when they're expecting someone else to do it. So,
yeah. And no, I agree with that. And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, obviously there does come a time where some things have their natural ending because it's not working and there is no way to figure it out. But then also, as you say, when people come to you with something and say, hey, fix it. You know, it's like that. I always look back to that episode of Friends, for those of you that, you know, love Friends out there, when he talks about, you know, when Joey talks about what's on his CV and he says, you know, can you horse ride? And he goes, you just say yes, and then you figure it out later. You know, it's the same with this, and it's that same mentality that I've gone to some partners before and I've gone, yeah, we'll take it. And it hasn't worked. Now, I do agree with the fact that sometimes that comes from the initial person who's looking to outsource. And it's basically like throwing mud on a wall and seeing what sticks. That is essentially the theory behind this. But then at the same time, I've also seen people give support. I've seen people give training. I've seen people give as much as they physically can. And they do expect the outsource to have it because maybe they don't even have this process in-house. And what I want to be clear at, for those of you that are thinking to outsource or outsourcers that are going after companies out there, you've got to remember that some clients that business that you win, they don't even have this process already in place. So it's a lot of figuring it out. I worked with a client recently, you know, they wanted to put a sales campaign offshore, but they didn't have it in the UK. It was something new. It was something fresh. So I think everybody was still learning at that point. You know, websites were built, emails were created, everything was built from scratch. So I think in some instances, you should also be prepared for what's coming down the pipeline. But again, not everybody needs everything. Some people can just pick up the phone, start dialing and sell product like it's tomorrow, right? So I think it's a synergy that has to be built. And as you said, that does come over time and it does come over relationships. And I think that's something to really think about. But at the same time, I've been given clients that come in and go, hey, here's my process map folder, go. And when you get something like that, it's like a gold mine. I worked with a client recently who literally gave me a 300-page folder and said, that's what we need to outsource. There's process maps. Here's the systems, here's the logins, here's this, here's that, go. Guess what? We handed it over to the team and they ran with it. And guess what? It's as successful as it was when it was onshore. They're just saving money doing the same thing.
Hey, it's Oliver Catt of Cutter and Catt, and we'll be right back to the podcast. But first, are you ready to help build up the confidence of your call center team so that they can scale and generate more revenue? In our experience, there are many factors that could be keeping your sales operation from achieving the success that you want. The first step to creating call center confidence is to determine the gaps between where you are now and where you would like to be. If you're ready to find out how we can help your sales operation, whether it's anything from training to systems, technology, outsourcing, or anything else in between, email info@callcenterconfidence and we'll set up a free assessment call to find out how we may be able to help. Now back to Jason and I chatting about call centers.
Yeah, and that other extreme where a company knows what it takes, they know their formula of what it means to be successful and scalable with their sales operation. When that's handed off to an outsourced partner at any level, it is great. Like, it is such a huge thing. And whenever I've outsourced or brought on partners as other offices to help us in ways that we're growing internally, but we want to keep growing, then that's always been the key, is to provide that. I think the biggest thing, though, is to also realize that if you're successful in-house, right? So let's say you've got a sales organization and you're in, I don't know, pick a state. We're in Texas and you've got an office, you've got a center, you're calling in Texas, and then you outsource to a place offshore, Caribbean, South America, Central America, South Africa, wherever it might be. Also understanding that whatever process you have in place and training is great for people in America that know America and know what you're selling, and they're a part of your company culture and a part of that local community. You also always want to make sure you add more training and understand what it's going to take for somebody who's not in the US that might not be familiar with your market to be successful at what you're selling or generating leads for, because it's totally different. I mean, I think a lot of times, and this is where, you know, we can get into some of the smaller reasons why campaigns struggle or fail, or outsourcing fails, is that we take for granted, I'll say we being in the US and from the US, take for granted what we know when we call somebody who's in the southern part of the US in Alabama, and we know how they like to be treated and how to talk to them versus New York versus California versus Texas and all these regional things, because it's just second nature, right? Like, I'm sure with you, there's parts of the world that you're used to where you talk to somebody because you've been in the call center space, you just know how to handle that conversation with that kind of person, how to speak to them and what not to say, right? Like, you know, we're talking to someone in the UK versus another part over there, it's like, okay, what do you not say? What do you say? What do you not bring up? Because you know it's going to piss them off, right? And so, politics. You know, politics, football, you know, depending on what team you want to talk about with football, hey, right? Look, we're talking European football.
I'm still learning American football. Hey, look, I'm learning it. I'm this side of the water, so it's something that I'm picking up. I'd like to think I'm doing pretty well with it, but I would never speak to a fan about it because they'll probably just go, that idiot nothing knows nothing.
Yeah, well, and that's really, you know, for me, when I'm training teams and working with them, it's also that balance of being authentic, right? If you don't know anything about, let's say, American football, you're in any sales role, even within the U.S., then don't talk about it, right? If that's not something you can talk about or like, or, you know, that you want to focus on, then don't, right? But that's the thing that a lot of companies, when they outsource, they don't realize, wait a second, people don't understand all these little nuances, and you want to train them and you want to support them so that they can be successful as if they were in your office working for your company.
So in that instance, how would you sell with authentic persuasion?
I'm glad that you asked. Interesting. The big thing is that authentic part, right? It's you knowing who you are and what your strengths are and what you bring and what you like to talk about and don't like to talk about. I think one of the things that gets people in trouble in sales, and we're talking about outsourcing, we're talking about offshore primarily or nearshore, and speaking to that in specifics, is that a lot of times people from other countries calling into the US or calling into another country feel like there's a way they have to act as a salesperson because that's what they think a salesperson should do. Oh, let's talk about the weather. Oh, let's talk about sports. Oh, did you see the World Series? Like, I've even seen these third-party apps and services where literally it's a part of your browser. When you're dialing somebody, it pulls up their phone number, their region, tells you about the weather, the sports, the activities, the events this weekend, all of these things, so you can relate to that person, which I think is valuable. But if you don't care or know anything about those things, then that's not authentic.
When I first did my first call center job years ago, well, decades ago, you know, I was working in a retentions team. So that was one of the hardest things that I'd ever do at the time. It was sales with service. It was turning an unhappy customer into a happy customer just to keep their products and service. And you had to build rapport. You had to do it quickly. So I used to, obviously not breaching DPA, but when they used to give me their postcode or their regional code or zip code, as we'd call it over this side of the world, I used to quickly throw that into Google and just get a region for where they lived. At which point, you know, if I knew the area, I could authentically talk about that area that I've been here, been there, blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't talk about the weather. Look, we all know the weather is the biggest waste of time when it comes to these conversations. We go, oh, you got nothing else to talk about. But at the same time, I could build that relationship with that customer very quickly. And I think the point where you were going to, which I really want to touch on, is if you don't know the area, don't lie. Don't be, you know, disingenuous. Don't make it up. Don't. I was going to say something I probably shouldn't say live that's going to go on a podcast, but don't say something wrong at the wrong time that's going to anger this person, or let alone be a lie, because you can be caught out in a lie very quickly if you don't know and that customer is able to call you out. If I started speaking to somebody about NFL, right? And I was like, yeah. So I watched the Super Bowl this year, blah, blah, blah. I did that. Oh, what a great game, blah, blah. And then somebody asked me about a team in a certain location. I'd be like, yep. And they'd just be like, blagger.
Yep.
And that's it.
Well, and so here's the biggest thing for anyone watching this that has a team or anyone that's in a sales role, offshore, onshore, doesn't matter. One of the biggest things I think that could make you successful when it comes to that is A, like you said, don't pretend, don't be inauthentic. A lot of people in sales think they have to act a certain way when they're building rapport, and you've got to be authentic to you. So I think that's the key. The second thing is it's okay not to know, right? Because if we really think about it, somebody in sales, the salesperson, I'm using air quotes here for anyone listening to the podcast, the salesperson that we're all afraid of, that we don't like, the classic sales mode that feels gross, they want to be buddy-buddy. They want to do lots of rapport. They want you to like them so that you will hopefully buy from them, right? One of the biggest things you can do to separate yourself from that kind of person that the customer is worried about dealing with is just do the opposite. Don't act like a salesperson. Act like a human. Act like a person. And here's what's cool is if you don't know a region, if I'm calling to a region, and I've only been to so many places in the US, so there's a whole bunch of places I know of theoretically, but I've never been to. The best thing you can do is tell them you don't know that region and ask questions. Just be curious, get them talking, which is actually more valuable than you talking about yourself or your teams or your stuff, because nobody cares. They only care about themselves. So the more you can get them talking about themselves, just asking questions and being curious, you'll learn so much more and they'll feel like you care, as long as it's genuine and authentic. That's the key, right? Now, we also know a bunch of people in sales who ask questions and they're just doing it as a process, or they're just trying to get dirt on the person so they can then use it against them in the sales process and their closes and their manipulation. So that's where the authentic part comes in. But just, it's okay. If, like, for you don't know NFL. Hey, I watched the Super Bowl. I didn't know anything about those teams. Did you have a favorite team? And just, I don't know. Like, it's okay. I don't know.
No, exactly. And look, I want to touch on a point that that Paul has just a very large comment, but a great comment. And I actually first met Paul back in mid-2000s, early 2000s, at an outsourcer working together. And Paul put, when outsourcing offshore and onshore, you need to spend more time on products and culture. You get you get out what you put in. So as the client, you get more when you work with your vendor to help them feel engaged as an extension of your company, but also what the work they do means to your company. So treat them like a department of your business, even down to branding of the area. Make them feel proud to work for your company and your product. Paul, look, I can agree with that wholeheartedly. And I think to summarize that and to put it in a nutshell, when Paul and I worked together at an outsource long time ago, it was just that. And the outsourcer we had literally built walls in their building and on their floors, wherever, so that everything wasn't segregated. It was big glass walls so you could see through and you could see everybody. It was very light, very open. But every department was branded with the campaign they worked for. And I remember the company induction we ran, and I'm going back some time now, one of the first slides that we gave everybody or spoke to everybody about was, look, although you work for us as an outsourcer, you work for X, whoever that client was. And back then, I mean, we were running campaigns for food distribution companies, for phone and broadband companies, TV companies. I'm not going to go into brands because that's not what we're necessarily about on here, but we worked for so many different clients. Like, it was crazy. One color to the next logo, to the next brand, to the next this. But you lived and breathed that. And when we used to ask the agents, who do you work for? What do you work for? They used to say we worked for the client. They were an extension of that client. And I remember Paul had his own, you basically, if I remember correctly, Paul, you had your own floor segregated off, and the brand and the culture in there was literally like you taken their home brand office and dumped it in our office. That was it. Right down to everything. The walls were done. The logos were done. The ceiling tiles were done. It was nuts. But that's how the outsourcer worked. And you got the feel of that. Every time you went into a new section, you felt like you were in a different company. And that's what I loved about it.
Well, and when I listen to that story, I can visualize it. And I think of an experience when I was using outsourcing. We had two offices ourselves. And I had at one point two other offices and two other offshore locations just as an extension, and treated them all the same. They had the same leads, the same marketing. They were on the same platforms. They followed the same scripting. They held to the same compliance. Like, they were treated the same. When I made training videos, everyone got those training videos. It was like cousins yep. of the family. Like, everyone is just a part of the same family. But when I hear you talk about that story and what that would look like in the center, it goes back to kind of, you know, your question to me, which was, you know, why do they fail? Why would somebody fail at using outsource? Like, why would that campaign fail? Why would the company struggle? When I hear you and your and Paul's experience with that, what that tells me is those organizations that were using you or you were using them was all about long-term, right?
Yep.
It was about long-term. This is a long-term relationship. We're literally going to have you form a duplicate company culture in your organization that's an extension of us, where our customers know no yep. difference, right? Whether they're talking to you or us, you're treated the same way. You are now family. That takes long-term thinking. There's a yep. lot of companies I see that want to outsource as an experiment, or they're worried about it, or they're doing it for short-term reasons and short-term thinking, especially kind of like where we started, you know, and Byron's comment about quality over price, where someone's like, we just need to offshore or outsource because we need to save some money. And if they're doing short-term thinking, then it's not going to work because yeah. they're not going to let the culture develop. They're not going to let it be an extension of their brand and of their company. And it's always going to be like us and them. And as long as it's us and them, it's doomed to fail.
Yeah. And I think you're right. And it's not a him, her, us versus them. It's a two-way street. As you say, it's family, it's cousins, it's creating that branch, it's creating that extension. And that's what it needs to be. So look, if you're thinking of outsourcing, top tip on this end, give them the training, give them the branding, make sure they see your training videos, they have access to your learning platforms, whatever it might be. If you've got that, give it to them. And that will really, really make a difference. Just being part of that family. I used to get branding and things from these people, like pens, notebooks, you name it, whatever it might be. we used to get everything, and I think that was one of the great things about it. And you'd come home with a new toy each week, you know, it'd either be a pen that held your phone or, you know, a notebook. It was crazy. It was great. But again, it made you feel special. It made you feel like you were part of the culture. You were everything. And again, it's down to the company values on the wall and things like that. You were brought into team meetings that makes a difference. All right, look, you weren't around for these points that I spoke about last week with Fred. And I know you've caught up. But I want to see and hear in your experience, you know, why people have come through you or spoken to you about their outsourcing and why they've done it, what you've witnessed that's initiated outsourcing. And the reason why I want your view on this is we have a lot of listeners that are thinking about it, that potentially going about it. And we had a lot of comments over the last week in regards to, you know, why should we do this? Why should we outsource? What are your views on that? And you know, they want to hear them, Jason. You know, we gave ours about pricing, cost, scalability, and everything else. What have you seen in your remit when people have come to you, or why they've thought about it or wanted to go and do it, or have gone and done it?
Yeah, I think, you know, both from my experiences being on the side of looking to outsource and then now facilitating that with clients, either in just some companies I deal with, you know, one of the big reasons, it could be cost, but it's also that scalability where maybe in their office, they've hit a certain limit, or in their area, they feel like they're struggling with hiring, and not just pandemic mode, right? Where it's tough to hire right now in general. I love how you and Fred like just didn't want to keep talking about that part because it's talked about so much. You and I have talked about it a lot, and the pandemic and how that's affected hiring, especially in the US. But I think in general, it can feel difficult at times, especially in the call center world, especially in a business like you and Fred talked about it, where depending on where you're at and depending on how people feel about it, it is not a good career people want to go into. It's kind of a fallback default career in the US where it's like, oh, I need a job, so I'm going to get a job at a call center, but I'm not going to be there very long. Or, oh, what do you do for a living? I work at a call center. Oh, you know, and then there's like some shame to that. So depending on what it is, and if you have a strong company culture, it's a place where people want to work, that's different. But a lot of times it's not the hot place for people to work or people to stay. And so that can be challenging, especially if people aren't good at it, right? It depends on if people aren't even good at it, then you're going to have that turnover. So some of that is just where companies feel like they hit a limit in a region or wherever they decide to set up shop, and they want to get more than they've got in the local thing. Another big reason that I see, and I know that I have outsourced for this specific reason, which is diversification of offices and centers, not having all the eggs in one basket. And there's many reasons why. Some of it technology, some of it internet, some of it's bandwidth, right? Like if the internet goes out here or the power goes out here, I mean, I used to run companies and call centers in California. Power goes out. We had wildfires at one point. Luckily, there was offshore centers still working because they weren't affected by local wildfires. Customers were still being serviced, sales were still being made, and that kept going on. But I think there's a lot of value to having diversity in your diversification in your offices because of, let's say, and this is what happens, this is some real world stuff here, is you have a center, you have an office, right? It's in some city, in some state in the US. Well, maybe there's some politics that happens. Mm-hmm. There's some drama that happens with some employees or some managers, or there's a bunch of turnover and the culture isn't that great, right? Like everyone wants a perfect culture and everyone wants low attrition and high retention. Employees are happy and they're running around high-fiving everyone all day, but that's not the real world in a lot of sales organizations, right? Like that it does happen. It is the ideal. I work with clients to get to that ideal, but it's usually not that way for most, which means if things go south, you're going to have some turnover. You're going to have managers who leave or aren't effective. One of the things that I've seen is imagine each office is kind of like this capsule, right? And petri dish almost, if you will, where if things start to go south in that, that's not good. If you have multiple offices, if you have multiple offshore outsource partners, if something goes sideways in one office, you still have the culture secured in other areas, and it allows you to keep going, even if over here you've got to do some work internally, right? Because you're dealing with humans. It's always humans at the end of the day. And so you just got to keep in mind. And so I think those are the big reasons to do that. It's, you know, a lot of times companies are successful to a certain point with the people they have, but maybe other people would sell it better. Maybe different points of views, different perspective, different hours. A lot of times, you know, people in the US don't want to work. It's hard to build a culture where people will work the hours you might need them to work, right? So let's say you need them to work really early hours or really late hours or weekends, outsource offshore to places where that culture is built, right? Where they're like, okay, this is not an issue. Like, we'll totally cover all these hours and days because we see a call center job, like you and Fred talked about, as a good career, as a step up, as something that is glorious. I mean, I talked to somebody a few weeks ago. He runs centers in Mexico, and he said his top agents in those regions in Mexico make more than doctors do in those regions in Mexico because of how they're compensated. In those other countries, pretty much a lot of places outside the US, that job is a good job, right? Versus what people think in the US. And so you could get better talent. You could get people who are putting in the effort and willing to work those hours.
Look, there's so much to unpack in there. But the first comment I want to make is, you mean not everybody wants to work in a call center?
No. Some of them love working retail or restaurants or washing dishes instead.
No, look, addressing some very quick points there, because look, we've got about 5 minutes left. I want to touch on this very, very quickly. First things first, look, talking about compensation plans, again, versus these guys in Mexico. I've worked with some outsourcers in some high-end sales campaigns where frontline sales agents are walking home with $100K a year, dollars, US. And then some of them make it even more than that. And that is ridiculous. But again, it's the comp plans, it's how well they do, and it's the experience behind it. And that's first and foremost. The other thing I want to talk about is when you talk about multiple locations and the whole BCP, the contingency planning piece. I think that's one of the biggest reasons why a lot of people look to outsource, as you say, is because people want those contingencies in place. You know, whether it's multiple locations in one region, multiple locations globally, whatever it might be. And, you know, for example, Fred and I spoke about it last week. A lot of people, you know, have a second office if their main outsourcer is in somewhere like, you know, the Philippines or Asia or somewhere like that. They have a second office kind of more, you know, further west, you know, towards Europe, South Africa, South America, whatever it is, because they're worried about typhoons and the hurricanes and everything else that are going to come in, any natural disasters. Mm-hmm. It's things like that that you have to plan for. You know, you look at the UK, for example, natural disasters that we get in the UK is a little bit of snow, you know, but we're never prepared for it. Brits are never prepared for snow, even though it snows every year. They're never prepared. More like, you know, they're never prepared where it's sunny in the middle of the year for a week. You know, it's those different types of things. Whereas you go globally, you know, where I am, I'm in a hurricane spot, you know, 6 months out of the year, I'm on hurricane watch. Although luckily where I am, it's very, very rare, but that happens. People in the US, all the way up that East Coast, to the point where you go to the South Coast, into the Gulf, you've got hurricanes, Panama, Central America, hurricanes. As long as you're prepared, contingency planning, be mindful of it, look at your locations and look at where you have to go. That's another one. And the other one I really wanted to talk to you about when you talked about the people and not everybody wanting to work in the call center and the shame behind it. Guys, Jason and I wouldn't be doing what we're doing today without working in a call center or working for some kind of call center industry. The same with Fred last week and many, many, many of the other very successful people I have worked with over my tenure of working within call centers. I said last week, and I'll hold my hands up, I was ashamed when I first went into work in the call center. I didn't know. I was like, oh, getting a proper job, sitting behind a desk, selling to people. But you know what? Some of the most rewarding experiences I've ever, ever had. And I wouldn't be sat here today without it. I wouldn't have experienced what I've experienced today without working in a call center. It's one of the best things that I've ever done, and I wouldn't change it for the world. But I know what you mean. It is one of those things. And especially with the labor shortage in the UK and the US at the minute, and people not wanting to go and work in call centers. And we said it last week, because everybody these days wants to be an entrepreneur. One of my best friends in marketing always says being an entrepreneur is a posh word for being unemployed. That's you know, you can say it that way. I think it resonates with a few people. You know, we all struggle when we set up our own business and do that. But it's how successful you can be. But honestly, you know, there is no doubt about it. Working in BPOs, working in outsourcers, working in call centers, one of the biggest things that anybody can do in this day and age. That's just my two cents.
I love it. I think that's a great place to end it on for session episode 24. Great conversation. I mean, I think for anybody thinking about outsourcing any of their processes, sales, service, even non-phone. I've helped some companies do some outsourcing of admin type work that's worked really well. Please hit us up, info@callcenterconfidence.com. You can find both of us, chat with either of us. We work together on these projects. So hit up Oliver or myself. Happy to work together with you together, because that's kind of why we've done this show, is to combine our resources and our experience and who we have contacts with, so we can help people as a combined team, right? And so make sure to reach out to us. If you're already outsourcing and you're struggling with it and you're not sure why you're struggling with it, some of the things we've talked about this week, some of the things that Oliver and Fred talked about last week could shine a light on what that might be. Hit us up again, info@callcenterconfidence.com, and we'll be happy to look at what you're doing, where the struggles are, and see really, and we'll tell it. You got to be okay with it, but we'll tell you, is it you or is it them, right? Because it might not be them, it might be you, it might be them, you know, what those looks like. Because the biggest thing is to succeed for your client's sake, for your actual end user customers, and for your business sake. You want to make sure you get that right, whether it's in-house, outsourcing, whatever that looks like. So please reach out to us. As always, appreciate everyone who's been here joining in the show. If you're watching it, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, like, make sure to subscribe and follow our business pages, depending on how you found us. Share this with anybody you know in the call center space, or just in general, put it out there and see who finds it. Also, you can find the Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Kat podcast, where the episodes go live on Monday, or by Friday, from our episodes on Wednesdays, which is always fun. And as always, Oliver, so good to be here. I'm glad to be back. I'm excited when you want to take a vacation and I'll hold down the fort. Any final words here before we send it off?
Yeah, I think one very final point here that Jason and I have spoken about over the last couple of days, sending messages back and forth very quickly. Very soon, we are going to be opening. So from episode 27, which is after our six-month anniversary, we are going to be opening up our episodes to you, the viewing public, all right? We are going to be inviting you into our shows, into our episodes, whether you need help, whether you need experience, whether you want to talk about something, if you are working for a platform, if you're selling a SaaS product, if you are in a call center and you need help and you want to break that down, we might do a group therapy session with everybody live on the air to kind of give you some pointers, give you some tips and things like that. We're going to be opening up. We've got two more episodes, so we're going to build this up, build the momentum up, and then we're going to be sharing out diary links where you can sign up to potentially be a guest or a host on the show with Jason and I. We're going to be doing that in 2 weeks. You'll see some links, you'll see some advertising and some marketing coming out for it, but we'd love to have you on the show and a big group show once a month and things like that. There's lots of ideas that Jason and I have put together for this. And I think it's going to blow up, because there's a lot of people asking for help, and it's how we get out there and help you guys in the real world. So really, really excited for that. But that's it from me. Jason, any final bits from you?
No, that's it. That's going to be fun, because one of the things, especially watching from the outside, is the times where you've had guests on the show, there's an interesting, different dynamic. It's fun. When you and I have conversations with somebody else, that's always interesting and fun. So we just want to bring more of that and kind of mix it up and, you know, do some more real world stuff. So thanks everyone for tuning in. Oliver, thanks for being here. And we will catch you all next week on Call Center Confidence with Cutter and Kat.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Call Center Confidence Show with Cutter and Kat. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. For more info about the show, you can always go to www.callcenterconfidence.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.